You're listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Kamajis, a licensed clinical social worker with a multi-state online therapy practice. I have a passion for empowering women and mom therapists to break free of the fear, overwhelm, and oppressive systems that hold them back from taking action and building the private practice of their dreams. My goal is for you to boldly believe in yourself as a clinician and business owner. If you're looking for a place to learn practice building strategy and skill while also claiming your own power as a woman and a therapist, then you're in the right place. Welcome to the show. Welcome to today's episode of the Raise to Empower podcast. At the time of this recording, we are at the start of a new month. It's a Monday, and the Kamajis household is bouncing germs back and forth. So you will have to excuse my voice as I'm a bit congested today, but that shouldn't have any kind of impact on the great conversation we're going to have here today. I'm joined today by my guest, Kayla Nettleton, who is a licensed therapist, business owner, mom of three kids, and coach for therapists who want support and guidance in their private practice journey. She helps therapists go from private practice overwhelm to becoming a confident therapist with a fully booked practice and working on other dreams. In her private practice, Kayla specializes in helping women overcome anxiety, perfectionism, and people-pleasing tendencies so that they can lead a more fulfilled and authentic, aligned life. Kayla, welcome to the Raise to Empower podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited for us to chat. We're going to be doing a podcast swap with Kayla on her show in a few weeks, but I'm excited that I get you first and we get to connect now. So for listeners of the show, they know that we always start by asking guests to kind of share their story. I love hearing how we all come to this work, because I think there's so many similarities and so many differences. Mm-hmm. And I find it to just be like reaffirming or kind of remind us of, yeah, like that's why I started, or I, you know, what a really unique experience or journey here. So share with listeners a little bit about, you know, how did you say, I think I want to become a social worker. I think I want to go into private practice.
Yeah. So part of that was just growing up, I really enjoyed helping people in any kind of capacity. I was in like student council and all those types of things where volunteer activities were encouraged. And I always had a great time being able to do that. So that kind of stemmed my thoughts of, okay, I want to do something that's going to help people for a living. And my parents always brought up me being a lawyer, which is not uncommon, right? You should be a doctor. You should be a lawyer.
Yeah.
Because those things make a lot of money and you're going to have a great living. And so for a long time, I would say, I'm going to be a lawyer. Sure. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I want to do. But that really wasn't what I actually wanted to do. That was the thing that I needed to choose to please my parents.
Yeah.
I still am. I consider myself a recovering people pleaser and perfectionist. And so it was definitely a battle to choose my direction in terms of what I wanted to do. And there was a lot of confusion because it was that balance of trying to do something that would make my parents proud, but also that I would enjoy doing. And I then landed on psychology. And luckily, I went to Baylor University and they have this career counseling center. And I was lucky enough to be able to get in the career counseling center pretty easily. And I did a bunch of those aptitude tests and all of those, you know, personality things. And they had given me a list of, okay, these are the kind of jobs that you'd be great at. One of them was teacher. One of them happened to be lawyer, nurse. And then one was social worker. And I'm like, what is that? Can you tell me more? Because really the only thing I had ever heard about what a social worker was, it was during a career day. And it was someone's mom who worked for CPS.
Yeah.
And so when she described her job, I immediately thought, that is absolutely not what I want to do. But she framed this as, this is what a social worker does.
Yeah.
And I mean, we all know that that's also how the media frames.
That's what people think of as a social worker, right? If someone says social worker, what do you think of? Someone who's going to take somebody's child away.
Yes. And so I immediately was like, oh no, I'm never going to be a social worker. And so during that time, when I was talking to that career counselor, I did ask for more information because that specific interaction with that woman, it didn't come to my mind until later on. And I was like, ooh, that sounds interesting. And I think I would have way more options in career of social work than in psychology. And so I switched my paths because I was already on like a psychology track. I switched my paths. I told my parents, and my dad was a little bit freaked out. Like his initial thought was, you're not really going to make any money. And I was going to this private school. And he goes, how? I mean, we'll support you, but I just want you to know that you're probably not going to make a lot of money. And I told him, okay, this is what I want to do, and I'll figure that out. And so I went through that. That's how I landed in social work. I absolutely loved my time in my social work journey at Baylor University, which is interesting because it's a Christian university, and you wouldn't immediately think that they would have like this great social work program, but their social work program is phenomenal and I absolutely love it. And I learned so much from their program. I felt like I gained so much more than I did in my master's program because
Interesting.
at the time their professors, because the school was so small, I don't know how much it's grown now, because the school was so small, they had professors who were teaching the master's program, teaching the bachelor's program. So there was a lot of overlap in what we were learning.
So you got your bachelor's in social work and then went on and got the
Yes.
master's, and both from Baylor.
No. My bachelor's was at Baylor University, and then my master's was at the University of Michigan. And so that's how I did that. And the perfectionist in me chose the University of Michigan because at the time it was the number one school in
Number
social
one.
work. So why wouldn't I go there?
Exactly. I applied there too, because exactly, perfectionist here, right? Like, it's number one. You got to go number one.
And I was definitely that person. I've changed a lot now. I don't feel the need to like go and do the best thing ever, even though I do my best in my work, but it's so different than having this need to go to the number one to prove something to people versus that being something that you want to do for yourself.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. So when you decided, okay, social work is the path, was private practice the end goal?
Absolutely not. Private practice was not the end goal. I was actually, my master's degree was in social work for policy and evaluation. Luckily, I had done the credits needed to be able to apply for the LCSW license. So I had all of that and I didn't have to take any extra schooling. But my goal was not to be in private practice. I wanted to go to Washington, D.C. and work on policy and do all of those things. And I got pregnant during my master's program, and we decided to move back home, which is Del Rio, Texas, for me. My husband's from this area, but it's a tiny, tiny, not even really an incorporated town called Comstock, which is 20 miles outside of Del Rio. And we're in a small rural area, rural town, and there really wasn't anything I could do for policy and evaluation. So then there was the path of first trying to find a supervisor because there was none in my area. There's very, very few therapists where I am. And finding a supervisor was difficult. So I did different jobs. I worked for a nonprofit making like $14 an hour part-time, working for an early Head Start. Then I moved up and I worked for a hospice in a hospital. I then moved into working at a detention center slash county jail. And from there, I met someone who introduced me to a supervisor in another town and went to a group practice and kind of fell into private practice after that because the group practice was not encouraging to private practice or people who were interested in going to private practice. It was very much fear-based.
The group, the practice itself was fear-based for those wanting to do it themselves.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I was, my whole thought was, oh yeah, of course I'm going to stay here. I don't want to do all of that because they made it sound very scary to go into private practice. And so then I ended up having the thought because of another therapist friend of mine who I'd grown really close. We became best friends. We were both working at the detention center at one point, sharing this tiny little office and one desk.
Yeah.
And we became like best friends at that time. And we both worked together and figured out how we could go out onto private practice. And she stepped out initially because she moved. So it was easier for her to leave the group practice because she was physically moving out of the area. And she helped me be brave enough to step into private practice, because I knew at that point that working over 30 client sessions a week, 30 or more, because we had to schedule 30 to be considered full-time.
Wow.
And I knew that was not going to be sustainable.
Yeah. And so, you had kids already at that point too, which, I mean, that's so hard.
Yeah. And from there is when I was like, I can't see this many people. It's going to be a disservice to both myself and the client. I mean, there is a need for group practices, especially in our community. There's a need for them. I don't want to say anything bad about group practices, but at the same time, we shouldn't fear people out of making choices that may be best for them.
Yes. No, I love this because I've talked a lot about this in solo episodes and with other guests, that I think, I don't know what it is about our profession, but there is so much fear in our profession. Not fear of like the world per se, right? Like, we're not telling our clients like you need to be like fear-based, but there is just fear-based about the work we do and about our careers and about ethics and values and all of this. And I think so many times, I know I've experienced this, and I think a lot of other providers who are thinking about like, do I want to leave this community mental health position? Do I want to leave this group? Do I want to go back to work? Do I want to change directions? Right? Like we get really afraid to do anything that is quote unquote out of the box, even though it may not really be out of the box, but somebody is telling us this is out of the box. Mm-hmm. And then we like restrict ourselves, right? Because it's so fear-based. And, you know, I think some of this goes back to our schooling and education, right? Mm-hmm. It's drilled in us. Like, you cannot step over these lines or out of these boundaries because then you're breaking HIPAA or you're breaking your code of ethics or you're going to lose your license, right? And so we like are so afraid to make decisions that really, like you said, I'm making these choices because it's what's best for me and or my family, but I'm afraid to do it because somebody has told me it's wrong or unethical or, you know, I'm going to get in trouble for it.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely had to do a lot of unlearning from the stuff that we were taught in grad school, and even some of the stuff that, not for me, but some things that we've learned in supervision. And I say not for me, because I had a very tumultuous supervision journey. I went through 3 supervisors because one was accused of something and they ended up leaving the field. The second one, she really didn't want to be a supervisor anymore, but the group practice was like, you need to help us out. And she said, okay, but she was retiring.
Yeah.
So they were in the middle of training. Someone else was training to be a supervisor. So once she became a supervisor, we all then moved to her, and she was very new and green, which you can still be a great supervisor even if you're new, but I don't really think that she wanted to do it. It was probably more she was pushed into being a supervisor.
I think I see this definitely in the higher education, where it again, is fear, like there's fear-based in supervision, there's fear-based, and then just amongst colleagues, right? You see in like the Facebook groups and stuff where somebody will be asking a very general question and they get like this litany of just how unethical that even thought is or that decision is. And I think so many people, I know I've done it at times, we hold ourselves back from making those decisions that are going to help us to feel better just about ourselves or our career or our family or, you know, our own mental health, because again, we're just so afraid of stepping out of line. I'm curious, I know you work with women and moms and this idea of, you know, trying to find the balance of the practice and being a mom, and especially with little ones. Are there places where you look at your work and say, okay, this is a place where maybe like a decade ago or 5 years ago or whatever, like I would have been stuck in a place of fear, but I have kind of carved my own path or like reworked the direction I was going because, again, this is what I needed for myself and my family.
Yes. And I want to say that I feel that that is a constant journey just with the changes that life brings. So I just had to go through something like this last month in April. I think it was April. My husband was abruptly told that he needed to move to the night shift, which it's not a real night shift, but that's their night shift. It's from like 3 to 11, 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. And we knew that this was coming, but we were expecting it in June or July. And so I had to figure out how my schedule was going to work because we had kids who were in sports and dance, and I wanted to be able to get them there myself because our support system, we have a good support system in place, but they're also helping out my sister. And I didn't want to overload any of them. So I decided, okay, well, what can I do? I needed to look at my schedule and move through some of the fear of clients are only going to schedule in, you know, between this time and this time.
Yeah.
Because there was always fear, like the 4 p.m. slots were always going to be easy to fill because that was my latest. For me, that was my latest, was 4. And funny enough, most of my 4 p.m. slots were not even filled. Mm. And so it made that decision easy because I had just lost a client on a Tuesday that was at 4. And then I said, okay, well, I can do this. I looked at my schedule. I had to decide how many clients that I wanted to see and how many hours I was going to allot for the clients each day. And then like that meant I had to have boundaries around my time. I couldn't go past a certain time. So right now I see clients between 9:30 and I have to stop. My last client would be at one with lunch in between there. And that was difficult because I had to move through the fear of, can I fill this schedule?
Sure.
If it's really only in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think to that point, that fear of like, can I do this? It's not like we think, oh, is it like, are the clients going to come? Right. Like it's like a fear about them, right? But really it's a fear about us. Am I going to be able to make this work? Am I going to be, you know, able to have the income or have the schedule I want? That like, when we, at least in my experience, when I've had to make like a schedule change per se, you know, we're so afraid of how like the clients are going to react, right? Are they going to stay with me? Are they going to be angry? Are they, you know, but they're majority of the time like, okay, right? Like either like that doesn't work for me anymore. So like, can you refer me out? Or like, yeah, I'd prefer to stay at this time, but like, I still just want to see you.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And most of my fear I recognized later was because I had been scrolling Facebook too much and people were already preparing for the summer slump.
Yeah.
Which, sure, there could be a summer slump, but we still need to take ownership of what are we maybe not doing as much for our marketing, our practice.
Yeah.
That maybe we stop because we get so scared of the summer slump than when we're marketing at different times.
Yeah.
Or we feel like we don't have to market as much at different times. And it's so much easier to get clients versus around this time. Maybe we have to ramp up our marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. That it's going to have to look a little bit different in like how we're doing things now versus other times. I think, you know, one of the things I feel like I've really I don't know if leaned into or have appreciated more just in the past year of motherhood is recognizing seasons and not just like seasons of the year, but seasons of your business and seasons of motherhood and that like the seasons of the year do a lot of times dictate certain things, but that, you know, there are certain times of year or times of parenthood that things are going to have to shift and be different. And like you said, okay, maybe like as you're heading into the summertime and where many people experience a summer slump, that's not everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And so what can I do differently heading into that season of the year so that I'm not making decisions based off of fear, but based off of informed data in many ways, and that I'm again making decisions that are best for me and my family and therefore my practice then too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
We've all been told we need to network in our private practice, but no one actually tells us how to do it or what to say. Enter Comprehensive Connecting, effective scripts that expand your networking community and actually fill your online practice. This free guide will give you effective scripts to connect with fellow clinicians, medical professionals, and community stakeholders to build strong networking relationships that will help fill your practice. In this guide, you will get tips and tricks for building relationships that will lead to referrals in your practice, real-life examples of messages used to connect with referral sources, and customizable plug-and-send scripts for your specific practice needs. So download your free scripts guide today by going to bit.ly/comp connecting. Are you a mental health practitioner looking to streamline your administrative tasks and get rid of the overwhelm of running your practice? Look no further than Simple Practice, the electronic health record designed with you in mind. Simple Practice isn't just another electronic health record. It's your secret weapon for simplifying the chaos. From scheduling appointments to billing and beyond, Simple Practice has everything you need to run your practice efficiently and effectively. With Simple Practice, you can finally reclaim your time and focus on what truly matters, your clients and your family. Gone are the days of scrambling to manage appointments and billing. Simple Practice handles it all seamlessly so you can spend less time stressing and more time connecting. With Simple Practice, you can schedule appointments with ease, send automated appointment reminders to reduce no-shows, and even conduct secure video sessions all within one platform. Plus, their HIPAA-compliant telehealth feature ensures that your client's privacy is always protected. Simple Practice also streamlines your billing process, allowing you to create and send professional invoices, accept credit card payments, and even submit insurance claims all with just a few clicks. Simple Practice has designed their platform to be intuitive and easy to use because they know that your time is precious and every moment counts. So whether you're squeezing in clients between school pickups and sports practices or catching up on paperwork during nap time, Simple Practice has your back. Join the ranks of empowered women and mom therapists who are revolutionizing their practice with Simple Practice. Ready to streamline your practice and simplify your life? Head over to bit.ly/AshleySimplePractice to start your 30-day free trial and get up to $200 off your paid subscription. Trust me, you won't know how you ever lived without it. What are the ages of your children?
My oldest is 8. My middle child, she's 4, and my youngest is 2.
Okay. So very similar. I have a 6.5-year-old, 3.5-year-old, and 7-month-old. So they're similarly spaced out.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that I have learned, or I am learning, I am deep in it still, but that because you have children that span these different ages, right? That like the 2-year-old and the 8-year-old are in different seasons of development, right? And have different needs of you. And your practice then may have to pivot and shift based off of the season that your children are in, right? I think summertime is a perfect example for that, right? Where if you go to a traditional school where you start in the fall, you have a summer break, the question a lot of times comes up is, what do you do during the summertime with your kids? If they're not in daycare, then you've got to find camp or babysitters and that kind of thing. And I know for a lot of women, a lot of times childcare will fall to the mother or, you know, one of the partners in the household. And if you are in private practice, it might be like, well, you have a little bit more flexibility, right? But that, okay, does that mean that I have to give up my work, or is there a way to shift this and make it look different for the summer? So like moving the practice with the season of what's going on with the kids, which can be a real challenge because it can, it may be hard to feel like either there's consistency or just like, you know, again, fear, what are my clients going to say during this season? Have you run into any of that yourself?
Oh yeah. And it, because part of the reason that, because I could have gotten my mom to watch the kids, but I decided I wanted to spend more time with them and be able to take them to their dance practice. Because I had a good friend whose daughter was in the same dance class as my daughter. I probably could have gotten her to take my daughter to dance class too, but I wanted to do that. I wanted to be there and go to their practices.
Yeah.
And with that decision, meant I had other things I needed to change. But if I'm only looking at what my clients, how they're going to react, I'm never going to make changes for myself.
I'll
probably become resentful.
Yeah.
And sure, we want to take our clients into consideration, but this is part of most of the people that I've spoken to go into private practice. Part of that is because of the freedom and flexibility that they didn't get from working anywhere else. And so to be able to name that and then say, okay, I'm going to do this because this is what I said I wanted to do.
Yeah.
It's okay to put yourself first and not your clients.
Yes. And I think it's interesting because that's not, that shouldn't be like a revolutionary thing, but I think it is so much, right? That like, you come from a social work background. I do as well. And, you know, I think back to, you know, the beginning of your career post your, master's degree and you're like that eager young social worker and you're like, I'm doing the things and like, my clients can, you know, they call me, you know, and they trust me and they're going to talk to me at this time. And like, you burn out so quickly. Right. And you're like, there's like a pride in like, I'm putting my clients first. Right. But then you quickly will burn out. And I also think you then, as just life moves on, right? If you, I was single when I started my career. I'm not single anymore by any means. And so like your priorities shift and change. And you also recognize that like, oh, well, maybe that value that was like taught to me in grad school, that like your clients are so important and you have to like be available to them. Maybe that's not really the most important thing, right? And so being able to say no, it is okay if I say no to a client, or it is okay if I put mine or my child's or my partner's needs first, because that's what's best for me and my household, not what's best for the client. It needs to be about me.
And if we're not doing that, it's going to impact the work that you do with those clients.
Yes.
I mean, we can't lie to ourselves
yeah.
here. We have to acknowledge that. If we're not putting ourselves first within our practice, resentment is going to build for those clients that are taking the spots that we wish we didn't have available, or we wish we could be doing something different.
Yeah. How do you see that show up for therapists that you've worked with, like with their practices, where like that resentment creeps in? Like, I know where, how I've seen it, like for myself, when I've dug myself into situations like that. What are some of the ways you've found that that builds up for therapists that you've worked with?
Oh, I've seen it build up when therapists have opened up the weekends for their practice in the early stages that they're trying to fill. I mean, even some people who've been and who think like, well, maybe it's because I don't have the right spots available, I should open on the weekend.
Yeah.
And then when they realize, whoa, this is not working for me.
Yeah.
And they believe that they can't make the changes because they're the one who decided that they were going to be available during this time.
Yeah.
But when you recognize that that is not working for you, it's okay to change. It's okay to shift. And letting your clients know that is teaching them that piece of the self-awareness and being able to advocate for yourself. It also highlights the importance of having a good referral network so that you, if needed, you can refer some of these clients out if that is the only time that works for them.
Right.
But it doesn't mean you have to, the word that comes up is martyr yourself for the client to be able for them to get services.
Well, and I think that that idea of like that martyr, again, is drilled in us a lot of times, whether it's in like our field placement or supervision or our graduate programs. And you hit the nail on the head. So many of us go into private practice because of the time, freedom, flexibility, and autonomy. But we also have a tendency to recreate the mess that we got ourselves out of if we're not careful with how we're really, consciously designing our practice. That, we may be taking on time slots that, like, no, I don't want to be working on the weekends, or no, I don't want to be seeing clients at this time, but I'm doing it because I think I'm supposed to, or that's what the client said they needed. So I might as well, open up that time slot.
Yeah. Because I knew a therapist who had opened, she was seeing clients on Saturdays and recognized that there was lots of things that she wanted to be able to do on Saturdays, like go to the farmer's market or go to the different little shops that her community would have. She was missing out on that. And that was important to her to be able to spend time with her partner and friends during that time. So when she realized that, she decided, well, actually Sunday, I think, I don't remember if it was mornings or afternoons, but Sundays work better for me to see clients than Saturday. And she decided that for herself and made it work and is so much happier with that shift.
Yeah.
And she enjoys working that day. And I believe she doesn't work on Monday. It's another off day that she gives herself.
I'm curious, one of the things I think that a lot of us struggle with, if we're recognizing the way I've designed my practice doesn't work for me anymore, whether it is because of the schedule, whether it is because of the type of insurance or payer source, or maybe we're private pay and we think it needs to be this way, but maybe insurance isn't a direction I want to go, right? Like, we've created whatever our practice is and we're realizing it's not working for us anymore, whether it is just for a season it's not working or just in general. And I'm curious, as a mom and as a practice owner, what are some strategies or some things for us to think about to help us slow down and be able to kind of make that pivot or redesign or realign so that our practice does work with what we have going on with our family and with our kids and for ourselves?
Yeah. And You definitely answered that question. It really takes us being able to slow down enough and look at all of these pieces and how they're playing with or against each other and decide, because if we're not slowing down to make those decisions, we're probably going to make a drastic, impulsive. There we go.
Yeah.
An impulsive decision in our practice, or a fear-based decision in our practice, versus a decision that we feel confident about, and we made the decision for us outside of that fear and impulsivity. As a mom and private practice owner, especially with multiple children, I do want to state that I'm lucky enough to have a partner who we share the load in terms of paying for things in our home, or an extra income that we can rely on. There we go. So that allowed me to take some risks in my practice that not everyone may have. And so, like, being able to invest in certain things because I was, I had the flexibility and the income to do that, because I knew that my husband's income would come into play too. It wasn't just on me. And I know that there are women and mothers in private practice who they may be the sole source of income in their household, or they don't have another partner to rely on for their income. But it's starting where you're at. So maybe you don't have 30 minutes to an hour to set aside and reflect or give yourself rest and self-care. But even if it's 5 or 10 minutes, start there. Oftentimes we get wrapped up in, we don't have any time, but there is usually something that we can carve out. What might be helpful is looking at not just how much time you spend on your phone. I had just had this conversation with a client. They're like, oh, but my phone says I was on this much. I said, no, not just your phone. Look at the specific apps.
Yeah.
Are you on Instagram? How long are you on Instagram, Facebook, or any other kind of social media type app? How long are you on there? Because that'll tell you a lot. Maybe cut that time in half and give it back to yourself in some way. And another roadblock that I've noticed for women and moms is, what do I do during that time? I don't even know what I like to do anymore.
Yes.
And so just start with, you know, what is the one thing that you've been trying to do? Maybe put that in there in terms of, like, is there a book that you've been trying to read? Is there a workout you've been trying to do? What is already on your to-do list that, you know, could go into restful activity / self-care? I like to use restful activity because sometimes we do want to just sit down and do nothing, but sometimes going for a walk is going to be what we really needed for a restful activity. And when we can start where we're at, we then can recognize, okay, I do need this.
Yeah.
How can I carve out more of this time? I mean, even for me, this has been something I've been working on really the last 2 weeks as well, of dedicating at least 30 minutes to some restful / self-care activity, because I did find myself putting it off because there's always something that needs to be attended to, especially when you're a private practice owner and you're running your own business and you're a mom. There's always something that needs to get done, but it doesn't always have to get done in that moment, or you're not always the one who needs to get it done.
Yeah. Yeah. And it can be really hard to, and I'm preaching to the choir myself. It can be really hard to be like, make that conscious effort. It really takes effort to be like, I don't have to do this thing. Even though I don't want to do it, I don't want to do it, but I'm going to do it, right? Because I have to do it. But no, like, it is okay if that task doesn't get tended to either by me or right now or at all.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you can pick a space, like, what is there a space in your home that you feel the most relaxed or the most at ease? There is this chair in our playroom. And as long as the playroom isn't a disaster, I love sitting in that chair because it's super comfortable. And I'll usually read a book. And so as long as I can sit in that chair, the kids can be somewhere else, I feel really good in that area. And maybe this area is your bedroom, or maybe it's your kitchen, something, but that's the space that you feel the most at ease. It's the space you feel is the easiest to keep up with. So there's no distraction when you're trying to do this rest or self-care activity, because I know that that's also part of it, is we don't feel like there's a space where we're not going to get distracted. Like, oh, I should clean this up. Or I really should probably fold this laundry that's been sitting on the bed for weeks. And if that is the case, being able to work on, yes, I do need to fold this laundry, but right now I'm deciding to give myself this 15 to 30 minutes to do this one thing I've been trying to do, or I've been really wanting to do, excited to read, or excited to watch, whatever it is. I know a lot of the times it's, we're trying to get away from the screens, but sometimes you just want to watch that, you know, that episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
We've been watching that lately. Or the latest episode of Grey's Anatomy, whatever it is that you watch. And that's okay too. Just start where you're at.
Yeah, I think that's just so wise, because whether it is in motherhood or in private practice, it's so easy to feel like, well, I'm behind, right? Like, I'm behind on these tasks, or I'm behind on where I want to be in my practice, or again, like I'm in this, I've created kind of this vortex or this kind of, you know, storm of how my practice is run, and it's not what I want it to be. But like you said, just kind of finding a place to start that, like, no, it's not going to all shift tomorrow or today. It may take some time, but like, it's not going to happen unless you take that first step.
Oh yeah. And sometimes we really do need to slow down in order to speed up.
Yeah.
Continuing to push ourselves past our limits, it never ends well. If you're pushing yourself past your limits, for one, you're probably going to burn out. And two, you're not going to be using your energy like to the best of its use. You might be taking 2 hours on the task that maybe could have taken you 30 minutes if you'd given your time, given yourself time to take a much needed break.
Yeah. And it is so hard as parents, as moms, to take a break, but it is so, so needed. And I can speak for myself. It's not till like when I take those breaks that I'm like, oh my gosh, I needed that so much. Right. You don't really recognize sometimes how bad you need it. Like, you know, you need a break. And once you do that, you know, activity to care for yourself, whether it is going for a walk or reading a book or, you know, getting some kind of body movement in, or sleep, whatever it is, it's not till you do it that you're like, that was so needed. I'm so glad I did it. And how can I get more?
And reading a book that's not related to practice. I mean, I tell this to like the couples that I work with, when you're taking a break because you're trying to get out of this flooded state, you cannot be thinking about that interaction that you just had. You need to go and distract yourself and do something so that you can, you know, get back to a leveled state. And that applies to here as well. We can't like leave and go read a therapy book or go and like go on a walk and think about how we're going to change some of the stuff in our practice. Sure. That's not rest. That's just trying to, what is it? Like loophole your way out of taking that real break.
No, it's so, so true. It's so true. Can you share with us a little bit about your podcast? Because I know you have a podcast that focuses on motherhood and some of what we've been talking about today.
Oh, absolutely. So the name of my podcast is the Modern Moms Roadmap to Balance podcast. And really what it comes down to is helping moms create the balance that they want for their life. There is so much noise on the topic of balance and what that should look like. And I want people to be able to create their version of balance. And that's actually one of the things that I ask every guest, because this is mainly with guests. I have a few solo episodes, but I ask all my guests like what their definition of balance is, because it's different. We all see it a different way. And I love hearing everyone's version and how it has played out in their life and being able to bring in experts to give knowledge to moms of resources or coaches or other things that are out there that we didn't know that we might need.
Right.
So the example that really sparked this idea was pelvic floor therapists. That was a topic that I had not heard of.
Yeah.
I had never been given a referral to a pelvic floor therapist. I have three children.
Yeah.
I probably should have seen one at some point. And it was the pelvic floor therapist. And then this idea that it's normal to pee once you've had kids, like yeah. pee a little. And then to realize that is common, but that is not normal.
Right.
Like, you should not be doing that. Like, it's not healthy to be doing that. There's something that you can do, someone you can see who can help you through that. And so it was that kind of sparked, oh, what else don't I know that I could do to help myself or to get the word out on these things that might change someone's world, might change another mother's world or perspective or quality of life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. Being able to like help connect people to tools and resources and thought processes, right? Because
absolutely.
Again, like there's so many things. I'm on my third kid and there's things I'm learning this time around that I'm like,
oh, yeah.
Where was this, 7 years ago? So absolutely, it's just like building a private practice or growing your practice, or right, it's a journey, right? Where you are in your first couple of years as the business is not where you're going to be at year 10 or 15. Same thing with motherhood, right? That, again, just the journey between your youngest and your oldest and just the different seasons that you're in those, with each of your kids, yet at the same time, being able to have a podcast like yours that you can go to and, pull what you need from it.
Oh, yes.
Regardless of where you are
in
that path of motherhood.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how I've built it. It's definitely a take what you need podcast. It's definitely, you don't have to go through every episode starting at one. It's look at the titles and see what, sparks for you and start there.
Yeah. Yeah. Where can listeners of this show find your podcast?
Yeah. So you can find it at where you listen to podcasts. So Spotify, Apple, iTunes. And you can also find it at my website, www.kaylanettleton.com/podcast.
We'll have all of that linked in the show notes. And besides your podcast, where is a great place for people to connect with you?
Yes, I love to hang out on Instagram. I love the content that I post there. I hang out there the most. So if you're on Instagram, you can find me at @KaylaNettleton_LCSW. I do have it that it's connected to my Facebook, but it's really from my Instagram. So if it's, I'm on Facebook too, but I'm really hanging out on Instagram and it's just pushed to Facebook. So I feel like Instagram is a better place. And then you can always find me. If you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at Kayla@KaylaNettleton.com.
Awesome. And we'll have all of that linked in the show notes for listeners to find easily. Kayla, I'm really appreciative of our conversation today and getting to just kind of talk about each of our experiences with, motherhood and private practice. And so I just thank you for taking the time to kind of share your thoughts with our listeners today.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the Raise to Empower podcast. Check the show notes for all links and resources mentioned in the show. If you found today's episode helpful or inspiring, be sure to share it with your therapist friends. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and leave your 5-star rating and review. It truly means so much to me and will help us get our message of empowerment out to other women and mom clinicians. And I'd love to connect with you in our Facebook community. So check out the show notes for the link or head to bit.ly/raise to empower to join us. I'll see you back here next week.